From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with scholar Mary Graybar, author of Debunking the 1619 Project, Exposing the Plan to Divide America. Let's now join Hank and Dr. Graybar in their conversation.
Who does Nicole Hannah Jones talk to? It's people who agree with her ideologically. It's college students. It's never with colleagues who are even mildly critical. So, you know, you're presenting this as if it were the truth. And the fallback that she has is that if you dispute anything she says, you are a racist. So it's a way to achieve power. It's propaganda. It's like Soviet propaganda. It's wiping out, you know, individuals from the historical record, you know, doing Photoshop, doing it in writing and in visual representations. And it needs to be called out for being that. It's not an alternative history. And one of the things I point out in my book, Debunking the 1619 Project, is Nicole Hannah Jones pretends that she is the one, with the help of her high school teacher and Lerone Bennett, to have discovered this year, 1619. That's nonsense. It's something that Black historians, white historians have known. It's an area
that's been celebrated.
It's been researched extensively by real historians. It's not something that she has uncovered as an investigative journalist or someone who has this particular genius for, you know, sort of unraveling the truth about history. It's been well known. There's nothing that is, you know, secret about it. It's a big sort of marketing project. And, you know, she had the help of the New York Times, these billionaires funding, you know, left-wing nonprofits. And it came out at an opportune time because, you know, the following year we had the 1619 Project riots, you know, ostensibly about, you know, the death of George Floyd. But, you know, from all the historical monuments and statues that were attacked, it seems to have nothing to do with George Floyd. So it is something that has very little to do with history. It has a lot to do with propaganda, and it has a lot to do with marketing and big money behind it.
Let's get into the details of that. Hannah Jones contends that slaves at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello plantation, which was near Charlottesville, Virginia, struggled under a brutal system of slavery, quote, unlike anything that had existed in the world before. You say that that is an error of such magnitude that only a profound ignorance of history can excuse it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, where do you begin with that, you know? And so, you know, in that chapter that takes that phrase as its title, I tried to go back and give an overview of the practice of history, you know, since time immemorial, and how universal it was. It's been practiced by all major religions and all continents where there have been human beings. It was the norm in 1776. You know, most people were either enslaved or in some form of servitude at that time. The idea of freedom was new. So, you know, where do you begin with that? But what she's banking on is the fact that this is not discussed in schools. And I used an example of, you know, attending an OAH teacher workshop at the Organization of American Historians. And there was a teacher there who had mentioned, well, less than 5% of the transatlantic slave trade went to the American colonies. And she was told, oh, don't tell your students that. You know, what they want is students to have this idea that it was, you know, only the colonies, the American colonies, and then the states that had slavery, and that all the people that were taken from Africa, supposedly kidnapped by whites. And I show that that's not the case. It was tried. The Dutch tried it, and they were soon slaughtered, and they gave up on that idea. When they did do it, and that was very rarely, they would have to get tribes, African tribes, to help them. So there were always Black people involved in, you know, getting the slaves, the African slaves, in the first place. So, you know, that's such a glaring omission, but it has to be there in order to promote the thesis that this nation was founded as a slaveocracy, and it remains a slaveocracy to this day. You know, in so many respects, there is still racism. Black people are still oppressed, and therefore we need reparations. And that's, you know, that's the purpose of the 1619 Project, is as a historical argument for reparations.
I think one of the things we have to get at here is that the most radical thing is not that America participated in slavery. The most radical idea that ought to be underscored is the abolition of slavery. Because slavery was pandemic. It was part of human civilization. It has always been part of human civilization because of greed, because of avarice, because of the sin that runs through the center of the human heart. So the abolition of slavery is something that we ought to take great, great pride in, not just as Americans, and certainly you can talk about Wilberforce and many others that were involved that gave their lives for the abolition of slavery. And certainly Thomas Jefferson, he moved expeditiously to end the Atlantic slave trade with the help of Congress. So rather than defacing his statue or trying to excise him from history or trying to say that the Declaration of Independence was a racist document and he was a racist himself, instead of saying that, we ought to be saying exactly the opposite, that this was one of the great shining moments in American history, where you had leaders who were wanting to abolish something that they recognized was hideous and heinous and ought to be abolished.
Yeah, I mean, I make the argument that he has been known as the Apostle of Liberty, and he deserves that title, and we should still think of him that way. And I tried to provide some, you know, stories about the obstacles he faced, the situations he was in his time and place, you know, in terms of trying to figure out a way to end slavery without war, because, you know, as he said, you know, you've got the wolf by the throat, you can't let him go, and you can't keep holding him. It was a problem. It was something that he could not figure out. And on a personal level, you know, he was born into a slave-owning family. His father died when he was 14. He soon had the responsibility of taking care of his mother's plantations and the slaves, and he hated the institution. He did not enjoy, you know, seeing people enslaved. And as far as the slave owners went, you know, someone who was enslaved by Jefferson probably was much better off than with a lot of other slave owners, including Black slave owners who were in Virginia and elsewhere.
Why has that largely been expunged from textbooks, the fact that there were black slave owners?
It's, you know, for political reasons. It's this attempt to, you know, and I think it's very complicated. It's this attempt to present, you know, a group of people as childlike, to say that they were incapable of doing anything bad, which to me is very insulting, because it implies that, you know, you need to be taken care of and you're like a child.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with scholar Mary Graybar. The 1619 Project is not just bad history, it is a danger to our national life, replacing the idea, goal, and reality of American unity with race-based obsessions that we've seen play out in violence, riots, and the destruction of American monuments, even the wholesale rewriting of America's history and cultural past. In her new book, Debunking the 1619 Project, Dr. Mary Graybar shows just how full of flat-out lies, distortions, and noxious propaganda the 1619 Project really is. It is essential reading for every concerned parent, citizen, school board member, and policymaker. To receive your copy of Debunking the 1619 Project, Exposing the Plan to Divide America, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. Mary Graybar, as they continue their conversation.
Why has that largely been expunged from textbooks, the fact that there were black slave owners?
It's, you know, for political reasons. It's this attempt to present a group of people as childlike, to say that they were incapable of doing anything bad. And I think you have these radical leftists who agitated, especially in the 1960s. And one interesting thing I found was that when you go back to the early Black historians like Carter Woodson and Benjamin Brawley, I think it was, and John Hope Franklin in their Benjamin Quarles, when you go to their scholarship, you'll see that they were so much more honest than a lot of these Africana studies and Black studies professors. They readily acknowledged the complicated situation back in the 18th century. They readily acknowledged the fact that it was the Africans who went and captured Africans of other tribes and sold them. You had Frederick Douglass, who had referred to the, and I'm quoting him, the savage native chiefs of Africa who were doing that. You had much more honesty back then, but then I think in the 1960s, you had radicals in academia, and they used presentism, they used history for social justice ends. And so history became twisted around. And so it's become accepted. And if you keep saying that, you know, you think about it, since the 1960s, we've been told the same story over and over and over again. And eventually, the real story gets forgotten. And those who dare to bring up the old story, like I do, are called racists. So we need to push back against that. And I deliberately use the research of these distinguished and very accomplished Black historians from 100 years ago in order to make this point.
I think you mentioned a phrase that bears some illumination and unpacking, the phrase, the wolf by the ears, which is a title of right. One of your chapters. Jefferson actually said, we have a wolf by the ears, and we can neither hold him nor safely let him go. Justice is in one scale and self-preservation in the other. And that underscores the fact that this is a tricky situation. Jefferson hated slavery, but he was, as this phrase aptly puts it, he was in the position of holding a wolf by the ears.
Yeah, I mean, after the Haitian Revolution, you know, which is lauded by Nicole Hannah-Jones and her allies, where you have a majority Black population, as sometimes there was in the southern states, or close to a majority Black population, yeah, there is a very real danger there, you know. And the tragedy of the Haitian Revolution, as Gordon Wood points out, is that just as we were moving to abolitionism, we have the Haitian Revolution, and you have all these people swarming over here and bringing their own enslaved people, who are inspiring Blacks here to become violent. And suddenly the sentiment for abolition is thwarted because, you know, rightfully, you don't want whole communities wiped out where you have these roving gangs slaughtering women and babies in the middle of the night, which is what happened in Haiti. So, you know, what do you do? How do you stop it? One of the things was to end the Atlantic slave trade. Okay, let's start there. And Jefferson, as president, made sure that that was done. He wanted to end slavery incrementally. He did not want a war. And, you know, it's always better to make changes without bloodshed. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to do that. nor were a lot of other people who wanted to as well.
If you go back and read the original draft of the Declaration, it's very clear that Thomas Jefferson was profoundly, deeply disturbed by slavery. He wanted to abolish slavery. I don't think there should be any historical consternation about that. It's absolutely plain and clear. But as you say, I mean, this kind of radical change requires a balancing act, and that's where he was. I want you to speak to the falsity of Hannah Jones' claim that Jefferson never actually intended to abolish slavery.
Well, I mean, she has nothing to base that on. She hasn't gone through his writings. And the claims that she makes in the 1619 Project aren't based on any real research. You know, we've got historians that spend their, you know, lives looking at this and have come up with the opposite conclusion of Nicole Hannah Jones. But she refuses to look at that evidence. And so she pretends that she is able to read the hearts and minds of these people in the past, and she hasn't done her homework. She's not a historian. She's acting out of resentment, you know, but it's not scholarly curiosity. She doesn't want to know the truth. And the 1619 Project is a polemic. It's intended to be an argument for reparations. She believes that white people owe her something, even though she, you know, she is a celebrity now. You know, no academic could ever hope to achieve what she has achieved in terms of influence and in terms of money. So, you know, it's just propaganda. It's propaganda masquerading as history. It's the kind of propaganda that Howard Zinn put forth. He and Hannah Jones use these rhetorical tricks. They pretend that they are uncovering something that's been secret. And I think people naturally want to know, oh, wait, is there something that, you know, people have really been trying to keep secret? And especially teenagers, adolescents, right? Oh, you know, your patriotic story is completely false. They like that. And so these two people are propagandists. They're pretending to be historians or to be writing about history, but they're not. They're twisting it around to their own Marxist political ends.
What about the narrative that Thomas Jefferson fathered Black children?
That's wrong. It hasn't been proven. I mean, I go into that quite a bit because that's something that's being promoted by Annette Gordon Reed, who is on the same side with Nicole Hannah Jones. It's at the Monticello website, but it's false. I mean, these are people who believe in science with a capital S. You know, and as I, you know, briefly described, you know, there was a report put out by 13 historians who are Jefferson authorities, and they came to the conclusion, except for one mild dissent, that historically speaking, Jefferson did not father any of Sally Hemings's children. And the DNA evidence shows that there is about 7% chance that he could have been the father of her youngest child, which he would have had to have fathered when he was 65 years old. And then the family did not allow further DNA testing that would have confirmed that. So you kind of have to wonder. But yet this myth is being put forth, you know, at Monticello, which is often cited as, you know, being a truthful source. And as I've written about recently, you know, Monticello itself, now the tours, the displays, the website is slanted. And that the idea that Jefferson fathered Sally Hemings's children, that was a rumor that was started by a political enemy. It was, you know, treated as such by legitimate historians. And then it was revived by Von Brody in the 1970s. And then it was picked up again by the other historian. She's not a historian, she's really a legal scholar, Annette Gordon Reed. And now the 1619 Project is taking off with it. So it's really outrageous, you know, the way that has come to be accepted as fact.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with scholar Mary Graybar. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Debunking the 1619 Project, Exposing the Plan to Divide America by Mary Graybar. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. Of course, you can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters. Life matters more. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org.